Deadly Serial contains adult language, discussions of violence, and sexual themes. Listener discretion is advised. Try to have fun. Don't take us seriously. Welcome to Deadly Serial, part of A Balanced Breakfast. My name is Lee Moffitt. With me, as always, is...
Laura Dedrick. Welcome, everyone.
So and we are... Oh, ooh,
no,
we
go
are
ahead.
Super duper excited about this one. It's a cult. It's my favorite subject.
We're fucking fired up about this one.
Yeah, we really are. This one really got me fired up. I was like, oh, man.
Lee is so mad, and it's going to be great because he is really pissed off about Waco. And I am, too. It was a mess. It was really bad.
I just all the faith in the government that I had before, which wasn't a lot,
right,
is completely gone now.
Goodness. Yeah, absolutely. It's a shit show. We're going to get into it. I think we were kids, and I remember seeing it on TV. But yes. I never really knew the whole story until we started getting really deep into it. And it really shocked me.
The only thing that I knew about it was whenever it happened and the media coverage from that. And they're like, oh, my God, they're killing each other.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it. And I was like, Mom, what happened? And it's like, it's a cult and they're crazy and they killed each other. They killed themselves.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it.
Yeah. And I remember seeing it go up in flames. You know, that was the whole thing on TV, which, you know, is a whole nother thing. But yeah, I had no idea all the stuff we're going to get into. No clue. Between February 28th, 1993 and April 19th, 1993, the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms, along with the FBI, waged a siege on the religious sect, the Branch Davidians, as well as their leader, David Koresh.
And Branch Davidians, they're like an offshoot of Christianity.
Yes, from the Seventh-day Adventist church. It's kind of an offshoot of that.
Yeah, they're no more different than... It's no different than any other religious group, really.
No. So this standoff between the ATF, the FBI, and David Koresh and his people lasted 51 days, which is bonkers. It resulted in the death of 76 Branch Davidians, including 28 children ages 15 and under, 2 pregnant women, and David Koresh himself.
Everybody. Almost everybody.
Almost, yeah, like almost. Like we said, this event was a huge, well-publicized shit show, and we're going to go into just how big of a disaster this massacre kind of was.
You got the government, and you got the media.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both lying to us.
Yeah.
They're both lying to each other. And they're on the same team. The government and the media are on the same team.
Oh, absolutely. We could have a whole... Oh, I know. We could go into it. Okay. So we're going to start with the leader of the Branch Davidians, David Koresh. So he was kind of a creep. You'll see. But like we said, the reaction to the situation was very extreme and the loss of life could have easily been prevented.
It's a stain on the American history that will never go away.
Yeah, I agree. It's like Kent State, you know? So David Koresh was born on August 17th, 1969 in Houston, Texas. He was actually born Vernon Wayne Howell. He would end up legally changing his name to David Koresh later in life, which, you know, Vernon isn't really a cult leader name.
No, it doesn't pack a power.
It really doesn't.
But so. David Koresh, those are both very important names in the Book of Solomon, apparently.
He was really into the Bible, as we'll come to. Yeah. So Koresh's mother, Bonnie Sue Clark, was only 14 when she had him, and she was a single, young, he never really knew his dad, who was Bobby Howell. His mother ended up marrying another man, and Koresh described him as a harsh stepfather.
Well, I know that he met his dad, like, late in his life, and it was very
like,
brief.
Yeah, I think he was, like, 15 or something when he first met his dad, and it wasn't anything big. I don't think it was. Yeah, you said it was very brief.
It was, like, an awkward moment, and then that was it.
Yeah. I mean, what do you say after 15 years, you know? So Koresh had issues as a child. Go figure, you know. He was dyslexic, and he was often made fun of by his classmates, called names.
Which we are not going to say.
Which we're not going to say because we don't like the word. He describes his childhood as a lonely one, and he also claimed to have been raped by older boys at one point. So that is very terrible and traumatizing.
That's a very serious claim.
Yes, it is a serious claim.
And I don't think that he would lie about that.
No.
I mean, I've got to kind of know David a little bit.
I do. I feel the same way. He's not Jim Jones, because Jim Jones gave me nightmares, but David Koresh is different. I mean, I know I don't know.
The way that it ended was the last thing that he expected to happen.
Yeah.
Because why in the hell would America be killing Americans on American soil?
Yeah, he was American. He was a proud American. And the whole time the negotiations were going on, he just kept saying, when this goes to trial, it's like, you're destroying evidence. You know, this will have to happen when it goes to trial. He really thought everything was going to end up with a civilized situation, you know, but it really wasn't.
No, he's talking about his lawyers and stuff like that. And yeah, he's expecting an outcome of everybody leaving in handcuffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everybody going home safely.
Yeah.
But he underestimated how much of an asshole the fucking ATF and FBI can be.
Yeah. It was just
it's brutal. Like, it's brutal. It doesn't make you proud to be an American.
No. No, this is not the best. Like you said, this is very much a blight on American history. It's something that'll go down as a big old shit show.
Oh, yeah.
So Koresh, despite his learning disabilities, by the age of 12, he had completely memorized the New Testament, the second book of the Bible, which is pretty freaking impressive, man.
When I was 12, I could remember all 151 Pokemon, but that was then.
I was going to say, there's a lot more now. Yeah, there's more now. That was back in the old days.
I mean, the Bible, a 12-year-old memorizing the Bible, being as interested in the Bible as Pokemon.
Yeah, see?
That's the kind of mentality that he had.
Yeah.
Is that this is real. I need to focus on this because Pokemon's not real. This is real.
And that's part of the reason why people were gravitated toward him, because he was so sincere and into it, and it was his passion, and he was a good speaker. And even people that weren't religious were just like, oh, okay.
Right.
Let's hook up with this guy. He seems to know what's going on.
He does. And his sermons are on YouTube, and you can listen to them, and they're kind of weird.
Yeah, they're weird. The vegetables and tell me about what you can't mix.
I got it right here. You can't mix bananas and oranges. Only apples and orange, or only apples and bananas. Damn it. Apples and bananas.
Okay.
No oranges and bananas. It's okay to have apples and oranges together, but if you get a fucking banana in there,
you're going. You're getting out of here. Get out of here. You can't have fruits and vegetables together.
Yeah.
And then
there's other things like he of course, you know, mated with all of the wives. I know we'll get to that, but as far as like weird things, all the women had to be completely covered up. Like if they bent over, you can't see shit. Which is important, I guess. But in any kind of Christian school, I think.
There's a lot of dress codes that go along with religion. I don't know if you call them dress codes, but you know what I mean. Like,
they said that there were a lot of things like that, like the apples and oranges thing. Like, just weird food combination rules. And that's pretty much as bad as it got.
And no milk, because milk was for babies.
Milk is for baby. Milk is baby food. Adults aren't babies. They don't need that.
Yeah, you don't need milk. That was another thing I remember.
He's got a point.
I like milk.
Milk is something you drink when you're a baby.
Oh,
I like milk too. I drink a gallon of chocolate milk a day.
So does my husband.
So good.
You guys are so grown up.
Yeah.
So when Koresh was 19, he got a 16-year-old girl pregnant. And she ended up leaving him due to the fact that she thought he would be an unfit father. So he didn't have anything to do with that first kid, but he had a whole lot more later. So soon after he fathered a child at the age of 19, Koresh joined not only a Southern Baptist church, which we have been to.
Oh, but many also, times.
Yes. But also his mother's church, which was a Seventh-day Adventist church, and he soon became a born-again Christian. So it was at the Seventh-day Adventist. I hope I'm saying that right. I really should have looked it up. I so apologize if I'm not. I think it is Adventist church. He fell in love with the pastor's daughter. Okay. And he sought guidance in the Bible. And he kind of used the Bible like a magic eight ball. And he opened the Bible and it was on Isaiah 34, which says a lot of Old Testament stuff. Mostly like God destroying everything.
Yeah. Fire, brimstone type deal.
Yeah. Scary, scary God stuff. But Koresh focused on the passage that said, no one should want for a mate. And that was good enough for him. So he went to the pastor and he told him that God had spoken to him and he was to take the pastor's daughter as his wife. And the pastor was not down with this and threw him out. But he persists. He's like really wants this pastor's daughter. And eventually they just completely expelled him from the church. So the Southern Baptist Church or the Seventh-day Adventist Church kicked him out. He was being a little too aggressive with his pursuit of the pastor's
daughter.
Yeah,
saying that you're talking to God and stuff. That's a bold statement.
That is a bold statement.
Be able to back that up a little bit.
In 1981, Koresh joined the Branch Davidians. And this was, you know, the religious sect that he would eventually come to be the leader of and would lead to his downfall.
Yes.
So the Branch Davidians had been excommunicated from the Seventh-day Adventist Church in the 1930s. They had a compound / headquarters on a ranch about 10 miles or so outside of Waco, Texas. They called this a compound church headquarters, whatever you want to call it, Mount Carmel, which was taken from the Bible. There's a Mount Carmel in the Bible. By 1983, Koresh was talking about prophet stuff. He was a self-proclaimed prophet of God, like most cult leaders are.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a prophet. He's like an offshoot of God, of Jesus.
Yeah.
Like he himself is not Jesus. He's not the son of God, but he's an important prophet.
Yes. The media dubbed him the sinful Messiah.
That is kind of metal.
Yeah, it does sound like a metal band.
That's pretty cool.
Sinful Messiah. Okay. In 83, Koresh ended up having an affair with Lisa Roden, a woman in her late 60s. She was the prophetess and leader of the Branch Davidians during that time. So this gets a little weird. So
the prophetess.
Prophetess. I saw that. Yes. So Koresh prophesized that God wanted him to have a child with Roden and that the child was to become the chosen one.
But the one.
The Neo. One. Neo. But Lois already had a son, George. And George complicates things in this situation. And it gets kind of amusing.
Gets a little out of hand.
It gets a little out of hand. It gets a little amusing. So George, her son, was supposed to be next and to be the leader of the Branch Davidians. And he was not happy that his mom was sleeping with Koresh and indulging in his prophecies. And George just really did not like David Koresh.
No. You either love him or hate him.
Yeah. But Koresh moved on from Lois Roden and married a woman named Rachel Jones. She was only 14 when she married Koresh, and he was 24. They had two children together, Cyrus and Star. And so the age of consent in Texas at the time was 14 years old. So in theory, if you both had permission from your parents, two 14-year-olds could go and get a house together and start their married life.
Or a 14-year-old and a person of any other age. Fucking age.
Absolutely.
14. Like two 14-year-olds getting married? That sounds a little crazy. But if both parents consent on it, who the fuck cares?
Like, worried about like band and my cheer test at 14. And am I going to do the cheerleading squad? Like, what? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so that was the age of consent in Texas for a long time. It is now 17, which is better, but 14? So at this point, Koresh is not doing anything illegal. He married a 14-year-old.
Yep.
In Texas.
He's a man who knows the law and his rights.
He does. So things are actually quiet for a little bit after he married Rachel. But the power struggle waged on between him and George, and George was just really sick of Koresh. So he forced Koresh and his group off the compound at gunpoint. Okay. So Koresh and his followers, which were about 25 strong, set up in Palestine. It's not Palestine. Palestine, Texas, which was about 90 miles away from Waco. So they stayed in Palestine, Texas for about 2 years. And during that time, Koresh recruited people and he gained followers from the UK, Israel, Australia. These were highly educated people for the most part. There were also a lot of elderly people. The elderly people like the cults.
They do.
There's a lot at Jonestown too.
Well, there's a lot of everybody. Everybody. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter what age you are, kids or old people. It doesn't matter what race you are.
A certain type of personality that's attracted to the cult lifestyle, I feel like.
Yeah.
So in 85, holla, Koresh traveled to Israel, the motherland. And it was here that he thought he would be killed and martyred. Later, he changed his prophecy and said he would meet his end in the United States. And he was right on that one. And he also said the prophecy of his martyrdom would occur at Mount Carmel in Waco. So, like, yeah, he was prophesized one thing correctly.
It's, even though I don't think that he expected anything of this to happen, he did kind of prepare for it.
He did, and he did preach a lot that, like, they're going to come for us. And he called the government Babylon because,
yeah,
you know, the whole Bible, and he said, the Babylon's coming, they're coming. So when they did come, everyone was like, oh, shit, this is legit. So yeah. It was even more intense, I guess. I don't know what you would say, but. So in Palestine, Texas camp, Koresh worked it so that everyone was forced to rely on him and live alone. This was a quote. All previous bonds and attachments, family or otherwise, meant nothing. His rationale was, if they had no one to depend on, they would have to depend on him, and that made them vulnerable. By this time, he had already given up on the message of his own Christhood, proclaiming that he was the Son of God and the Lamb who would open the seven seals. So at first, he's like, I'm just an offshoot of Jesus. And then he's like, hey, guess what? I'm Jesus now.
Well, yeah, he got a promotion.
You get a promotion. You work hard. You know, you put in the hours. So Lois Roden, the older lady in her 60s that he was in relations with, passed away. And I don't know why, but he decided to change his mind about monogamy and announced to everyone that polygamy was his way now.
Yeah.
In March 1986, Koresh slept with Karen Doyle, whom he claimed was his second wife, you know, after Rachel. Karen Doyle was also only 14 years old. So like I said, age of consent, Texas, 14. Okay. So what he's doing in his polygamy was ethically questionable, but it was still legal so far.
Yeah.
And he does get pretty creepy. So his first wife, the mother of his two children, Rachel, Koresh decided it was a good idea to sleep with her 12-year-old sister, Michelle. So now he is officially a pedophile. I mean, he was before, but legally now he is a pedophile.
Yeah, it's written in stone, black and white. It's legit now. He's crossed over the line.
Still, no excuse for anything that happened.
No.
I mean, you gotta go and take care of get him, but don't kill everyone in the process. There were so many other people in the
compound. Get him. And
children. Can just you do a him. Little, just do a better job? He had one job. So by 86, Koresh was preaching that he was entitled to 140 wives. So 60 women were to be his queens and the other 80 were to be his concubines.
Hello.
He's got a lot going on. All these ideas he claimed to have gotten from the Book of Solomon, like you said, which is an Old Testament book in the Bible. So George comes back into the picture, old George Roden, who, you know, he was banging his mom.
Right.
In 87. And they're still not getting along. And this is very strange. So you know a lot about this. To prove his claims that he was a man of God, didn't George Roden question? Can you please explain this? Because it is a mess.
Yeah. Okay. So he's like, if you're the Son of God, why don't you make this corpse that I just dug up come back to life? And he's like, holy shit. Like, what the hell are you doing, man? And then he runs away, calls the cops. He says, this guy's digging up graves.
Yeah.
And so they arrest him. And that's how you get away with being Jesus.
Yeah. You don't
tattletale.
You tattle. Koresh returned to Mount Carmel in camouflage with 7 armed followers, and they were arrested by the local police, who had been alerted to the sound of gunfire. And when the deputy sheriffs arrived, and there ended up being a shootout. This was before the actual siege. This was years before. So Koresh and his 6 followers were firing at George Roden, who had already suffered a minor gunshot wound and was pinned down behind a tree at the compound. Koresh and his followers were charged with attempted murder. But during the trial, Koresh testified, like you said, that George Roden desecrated a grave. And that was the reason they were, you know, trying to attack him. Right. And Koresh, his followers were found not guilty. And there was a mistrial declared in Koresh's trial. So,
yeah. Like a shootout. Like, yeah, he shot George a couple times.
Yeah. And then this is also insane. So a year later in 1988, George Roden actually killed a man over an argument about Koresh being the Messiah again. So he murdered Dale Adair with an axe blow to the head. And so that took George Roden out of the picture, and Koresh was free to swoop in and be the leader of the Branch Davidians. So,
yeah. Let's kill somebody in cold blood.
He killed him with an axe, and he went to jail because he was also not paying his taxes. And you know, that's worse than killing someone with an axe around here. Yeah, he is convicted of IRS back taxes as well as murder.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You don't want any of those.
No. So Koresh and his followers raised the money and officially bought Mount Carmel and the compound there. And he would later dub the compound Ranch Apocalypse. Also a good name for a band.
Oh, yeah. At least a song.
Yeah. Ranch Apocalypse by, what was it? What was it earlier?
David Koresh and the Funky Bunch. I don't know. He is an amazing musician. He's not amazing. He's really good.
He's not bad.
He's better than most.
Yeah. So by 93, the U.S. Department of Justice had collected detailed evidence of child abuse within the compound in Waco. So the ATF special agent, David Aguilera, had interviewed a former Branch Davidian. Her name was Janine Buns. She claimed that Koresh had fathered at least 15 children with various women and young girls on the compound.
Yep, this is the crime here.
Yeah, this is one of the main reasons why they want to go in and just lay waste everything.
Yeah.
So this is also interesting. When a married couple would join the Branch Davidians, their marriage was made null by David Koresh. You're no longer married. This was, of course, so he could sleep freely with the women in the compound. Again, some as young as 11, it was claimed.
Oh my God.
Which is a little tiny baby, and it makes me sick. So it is. Koresh had fathered more than 12 children. DNA after the massacre confirmed that all the children were his. He had 12.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was also said that he would have the children refer to their biological parents as dogs, and they were to call him father. The ATF had also been investigating the Branch Davidians and Koresh for years. They had heard he was stockpiling weapons. So part of the way that they made their money as a compound was they would sell weapons at gun shows. So they only have an army. I guess you'd call it an arsenal, but it was also an inventory. So they had guns, and they also fixed up cars, which I'll get to that later.
I know that they would go to gun shows and stuff like that, and they were well known in the gun community, and all of their guns were legal.
They just didn't like that they were trying to do their own thing, is what it was.
Yeah, they were fully sustainable by themselves. They didn't need any government help at all.
The government doesn't like that.
No.
The ATF ran practice runs for the raid in Fort Hood in Texas for 2 days straight. So they were preparing for a war, basically.
Yep.
And they knew that Koresh had a lot of weapons. So for 2 days straight, they ran drills in preparation to raid Mount Carmel. So 2 warrants were issued. One was just for the search of the property. The other was for the arrest of David Koresh. And on February 28th, 1993, the ATF raided Mount Carmel for the first time. This raid ended in the death of with the death of 4 agents and 6 Branch Davidians.
They expected it to last 20 minutes at most. They were going to go in and out, grab them, go. That's it. They made it to where if anything happened, they had a backup plan for this and a backup plan for that and all that shit. I didn't see evidence of any of that.
Mm-mm.
It looked like a police academy movie. They're tripping and falling all over themselves. And the only fire that I see coming is going into the compound. Yeah. I'm not saying that they didn't shoot outside. Obviously, they did.
They did.
But you don't see that.
Yeah.
All you see is them shooting in.
And we'll go in. I mean, oh my gosh. There is so much to this. There's so much information out there. There's so many I don't want to say conspiracy theories, but maybe there is. There's a lot going on here.
I think there is some conspiracy behind this.
There is. Yeah. So I thought this was really just craziness. Koresh was tipped off about the raid. So the media, who had heard that the raid was going to take place, got lost on their way there. They were headed there. They already knew what was going on. So they stopped to ask a mail carrier for directions and told, they were like, oh, we got to go. Where's Mount Carmel? The mail carrier was not only a member of the Branch Davidians, but also the brother-in-law of David Koresh. An FBI agent named Robert Rodriguez, no relation to the king, awesome film director. He infiltrated the Branch Davidians, and Koresh knew that he knew pretty much the whole time that he had infiltrated the Branch Davidians, this Robert Rodriguez guy. So it was after David Koresh learned that they were coming for him that he confronted Rodriguez, and Koresh told him that he knew he was a plant, and he told him that he was aware that the ATF and the FBI were on their way. So he'd been tipped off.
Yeah, and that's the only advantage that they had was the element of surprise, which they lost immediately.
Yeah, and Robert Rodriguez is telling the ATF, like, you've lost the element of surprise, and they proceeded with the raid anyway, and that was not something that they should have done. I mean,
it should have ended right there. They should have packed it up and tried another day.
Another day. Or could you get him while he's out to lunch or something? Because for they real? Did occasionally go to, like, Denny's and shit.
You got Sierra 1 and Sierra 2 ready to take out anybody that comes out of the fucking compound.
I know.
Why don't you just focus on him?
Yeah. I know. So the agents approached the site in cattle trailers pulled by pickup trucks owned by individual ATF agents. Because they didn't want to make it too obvious.
So they used their own vehicles.
They used their own vehicles, which I thought was really weird. This was the initial plan. To have snipers set up around the property first. Then the cattle trailers would arrive with the other ATF agents who came with aluminum ladders. And the reason they had that was because Koresh's bedroom was upstairs. So the women lived on the second floor with Koresh, and the men all lived on the first floor. He's got to have his harem with him.
Yeah.
So Koresh already knows what's going on at this point. The government, Babylon, as they called it, they're on the way. So Koresh tells his wives and children to go upstairs because the walls up there are reinforced with concrete. Then he goes to the gun room and grabs an AK-47. And he tells the men in his group, please, don't fire on the ATF. Do not fire. He wants to talk to them. He's like, I can reason with them. We'll just work everything out.
Yeah.
The ATF arrives with 3 helicopters, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They would also later have tanks. And it's not known who fired the first shots. It is reported that the first firing occurred at the double front entry doors. The ATF agents stated that they heard shots coming from within the building, while the Branch Davidian survivors claimed that the first shots came from the ATF agents outside. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's no doubt to me that it all started at those 2 front doors. I think those were the key pieces of evidence.
Because they destroy or lose the one of the doors, right? It's like a right side.
All the doors.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, they destroyed
anything.
Everything. Yeah, they destroyed everything.
But they said that what they could see at the time was that there were a bunch of bullet holes going in and very little coming out, if any. And what I think happened, which happens all the time, but nobody admits it, is that people, they accidentally fire their gun and then everybody else starts shooting.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's happened before.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's not uncommon.
No. Somebody's geared up and gets trigger happy and then everybody's shooting at each other.
Or they're just, it's just an accident. And they're like, holy shit, he sees something and he's firing at it. I need to help that guy out. I don't know.
No, it's true. And it was just a perfect storm of shit. And so this 911 call from Wayne Martin is pretty, it's really sad. I mean, he's saying, you know, here they come. That's them shooting at us. We're not shooting. We'll play a little clip of it here. And it's crazy.
911, what's your emergency?
There are men, 75 men around our building.
Okay,
shooting at us.
Just a moment.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Lieutenant Lynch. May I help you?
Yeah, there are 75 men around our building and they're shooting at us in Mount Carmel.
Mount Carmel?
Yeah, tell them there are children and women in here and to call it off.
All right. Hello? I hear gunfire. Oh, shit. Hello? Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Lieutenant Lynch. May I help you?
Yeah, there are 75 men around our building and they're shooting at us in Mount Carmel.
Mount Carmel?
Yeah, tell them there are children and women in here and to call it off.
All right. No, he's hollering there's kids in here and everything. We know that.
So like you said, at this point, Koresh has been shot in the hip. And it wasn't immediate mortal injury, but it's one that he would never have properly treated. And he thought he was dying at this point. So he calls his mom and he leaves a message on her answering machine. And it's very sad, but he lives another 51 days with those bullet wounds.
Oh yeah.
Which sounds awful. So after the goddamn shit show of a raid, the FBI steps in.
Yep.
And this is where things escalate. The FBI did bring a hostage negotiator to help bring Koresh into custody. He was a man named Greg Nestner. And by day two of the standoff, the FBI had already set up a command post outside of the compound at Mount Carmel, tents and computers and all the shit they need. Koresh actually told the investigators that he would be willing to surrender if the government agreed to put his message on national radio. He wanted to talk about the Book of Revelations in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The negotiator then asked Koresh to release some children, which he does. He also gives them the tape of his preachings to play on the radio. So some did get out, which is great. 21 children ages 5 months to 12 years were released over a 3-day period during the siege. They were taken and housed together in a home where extensive therapy and questioning was conducted. So 21 children were able to get out. People were free to leave, but they were handcuffed and arrested upon exiting the compound. Even 80-year-old women were shackled and charged with murder.
Yeah. And even though you can leave, there's snipers.
Yeah.
Guys with automatic weapons and tanks and helicopters.
Helicopters.
Do you really want to fucking go out there?
I know. So Koresh actually changes his mind about surrendering at this time. He claimed that God changed his mind. And now he needed to write the seven seals before he could come out, or his interpretation of the seven seals in the Bible.
Yeah.
Now, during this time, Nestner, the negotiator, along with other negotiators, were about to get more children leased, as well as some elderly people. But Koresh told him that the FBI would never get his biological children, that his children were divine beings, and they must share his fate on Earth, and that he would not let his children leave the compound.
Hmm.
Once the FBI heard that Koresh was not going to surrender, they were ready to go in, claiming they could clear the compound within 15 minutes. Nestner was very against this, saying that a peaceful resolution was still possible with patience, but the tactical team was to drive tanks on the property and surround the building. Tanks.
Yeah.
Within a day, the tanks had destroyed two buildings and ran over not only all the cars on the property, which, like I said, that's how they made their money. They also ran over the kids' go-karts. There's a ton of footage of the tanks. It's almost like a little kid playing a video game. Like they were having too much fun in those tanks.
They really were. Holy shit. It's like they had a 13-year-old behind the wheel.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The tanks even repeatedly ran over a grave of one of the Branch Davidians over and over, which is very disrespectful.
They'd also like moon them and
they'd
shit.
Moon them. They would say very inappropriate things to them. It was a very much a frat boy kind of atmosphere, I feel like, which is a little dangerous.
Personal testosterone driven.
Yes.
Fuck fest.
Which a group like that is dangerous at like a fucking TGI Fridays, like put them in tanks and it's like, oh, well, they're going to blow shit up.
Yeah.
Koresh sends a videotape to the FBI negotiators, and you can see this tape. I've seen most of the tape. I know you have. Mm-hmm. On the tape, it shows his children, and shows his bullet wound a little bit, and just kind of talks to him like, these are my kids. This is, I don't know. He just kind of humanized himself, which was a really brilliant thing to do. Mm-hmm. It didn't work, but I understand what he was trying to do. Like, look, there's children here. I'm just a normal guy.
Yeah, he's like, I'm an American. Like, if you come to my front door with guns, I'm going to meet you at the door with a gun because you're coming after my wife and child. I got to protect them. It's the American way.
Yeah. And it's Texas, which is a whole nother America. Sake. Yeah.
They're practically their own country.
Not only did the FBI cut the phones, water, and electricity, they blasted horrible sounds into the compound as well as putting very bright lights on the property. So they would do a couple things. They would play these boots are made for walking with this. And the sounds of bunnies being slaughtered, which I heard when I listened to last podcast on the left. And it's just my new least favorite. It's horrible.
I heard it in the documentary thing too. And hearing it through a loudspeaker is just fucking horrifying at night. And they're shining lights in there trying to keep them awake and disorient them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the tactics used are barbaric.
Yeah. And it gets a lot worse. Oh, yeah. But yeah, the sound of bunnies being slaughtered it will haunt me now. I had my earbuds in. Oh, terrible. They're like, let's play that one more time. I'm like, please don't.
Let's play one more time.
No.
Love those guys.
They're great. At this point, we are weeks into the standoff. And after the FBI dismissed the negotiator, Greg Nesser, who still continued to urge them to resolve the standoff peacefully, the FBI came up with a new plan.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I want to mention the KKK came and from East Texas and decided to come help them out a little bit. I just had to throw that in there because they're like, the KKK showed up. We're sick of this. We're here to help.
Which is the last person you want to show up to support you.
Please don't help us. Please go home.
Like,
they had pamphlets they were handing out. Oh, God.
Don't use me as a publicity stunt.
Yeah, no kidding. So this was their plan. The tanks would be outfitted with long pipes, about 30 feet long. They would penetrate the compound through the walls, and then they were to pump tear gas into the building over a 48-hour period. The tactical team announced over the loudspeaker that tear gas was about to be pumped into the building. Now, all of the adults in the Branch Davidian compound had gas masks, but those masks were too large to be used on the children. So the children did not have gas masks.
And they had to have known that.
How could they not? There's no way that they could have really known that the Branch Davidians, the adults had gas masks.
But they just kept saying it's very mild. It'll just irritate them and stuff like that.
Dude, I'm getting into how terrible what they put in there was.
Yeah.
They kept saying, this is not an assault. We are not entering the building. They'd say that over and over on the loudspeaker as they're pumping gas into the building. This is not an assault.
Mm-hmm.
So the first tank delivers tear gas into the compound. And it is said that someone on the Branch Davidian side shot the tank, but we don't know. Things escalate from there. The tanks open fire and they push the media back. Because, you know, we don't really want you seeing all the shit we're doing.
Yeah, they say that it's for fire, but they're well out of the
fire
range. They just don't want them to see it.
Yeah. And the tanks break through the walls of the compound. So the tanks dispense the gas. There's debris blocking the exits. There's video of people being shown being run over by tanks.
Yes.
At one point, the tank's wheel, or whatever you call it, I don't think it's a wheel, but you know what I'm saying. It got hung up on something.
The tracks,
thank you. Evidence showed that it was possible the wheel was hung up on a dismembered body because a man who had been cut in half by a tank was wearing a red shirt, and it showed the red shirt stuck in the tank's wheel.
Yeah.
Like, just let that sink in for a fucking second. ripped in half by a tank. I mean, yeah.
On public television.
Yeah. Let's talk about CS gas here. Yeah. I learned more about CS gas. I wanted to learn. So yeah. CS gas is used on the military, but only for a few seconds or a few minutes at a time. It's kind of like being tased if you're a police officer. You have to kind of understand what it feels like.
Right.
But the CS gas used on the Branch Davidians was 10 times stronger, and it was for 6 fucking hours straight. CS is a powder. They dissolve it in methylene chloride, which is basically paint thinner.
Right.
An aerosol mist is created, and CS can cause unconsciousness, death, as extremely flammable. When it burns, it produces hydrogen cyanide, which is the same gas they use in the gas chamber for executions. Methylene gas from the CS coated the walls along with kerosene from the lanterns they were using because they had no electricity. It was a very windy day. The Potbelly fire.
Right.
Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Sure. A Potbelly fire is a best case scenario for a fire. It's like you're trying to create the best fire. And the best way to do that is to open it up. And you would see a tank on one side of the building and a tank on the other side of the building. And what they do at the same time is they open it up.
Mm-hmm. It just draws seconds, it through.
Seconds right? later, yeah. It basically creates a whole oxygen airflow throughout the entire building, which is perfect for gas explosions, fire, etc.
The fire started around noon on the 51st day of the standoff. I also learned a little bit about ferret rounds. I didn't know anything about this. They were fired. The ferret rounds, they basically are just what you fill with chemical agents like liquid or dry powder. But they are designed to penetrate windows, particle board doors, and interior walls, but they're supposed to be non-incendiary.
Right.
But the rounds alone are capable of killing someone. The plane above the raid, that is a whole story on its own, everything that captured. So a plane above the raid had an infrared camera. The video from the plane captured the tank firing into the compound. And like we said, we don't know who shot first, but it's 100%. The tank is firing into the compound.
Yes. And then you see other firings right next to the tank. And those are FBI agents or soldiers or ATF, whatever. It's the government.
Yeah.
And they're shooting into the building at all. So the only exits now are the ones that the tanks made.
Yeah.
Everything's covered in rubble. The CS gas.
CS, yeah.
Like you said, they use 10 times as much.
Yeah.
That would probably kill them.
Most were unconscious. Yeah, most of them were unconscious or had been killed by rubble. Because they were like, why are people not coming out? It's like, well, you just gassed them too hard and then they can't get out, you know?
Yeah. And then a few would die. And they said by 51 days, they wouldn't be able to do anything. They would be like sluggish and just completely out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the only thing that could really get them moving, I guess, would be fire. And you see them escaping and you see them being mowed down.
Mm-hmm.
You see that.
Yeah.
So it's, they say that they didn't even fire a weapon. They didn't even fire a single shot.
The FBI said that. Yes. We've never fired a single shot. I'm like, are you out of your mind? How many video? I mean, there's video of it everywhere. What? Yeah. So yeah, it was 25 mile an hour winds that day in Texas. Perfect conditions for the building to go up super fast. Three separate fires began inside only 3 minutes, but the Branch Davidians, of course, the FBI says that the Branch Davidians started the fire. The Branch Davidians claim that they saw fireballs being shot into the compound.
Mm-hmm.
So the survivors say that they did see the tanks firing in it, but who knows? We don't know. It went up fast.
And they asked them in court. They were like, did you have a plan in case the building caught on fire? And they said, yes, we did.
Let it burn.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, they held up the fire. What, 13 minutes was?
At least.
Held up the fire department to get to the fire. Yeah.
Because he didn't want the firefighters to be shot at. And there's very minimal fire coming out of the compound. Very minimal. I mean, they did kill four agents and injure six. Like, that's not.
But the nothing. Body count on the other side is way higher.
Yeah.
It includes a lot of children.
Women and children.
Yeah.
That's the difference here.
Yeah.
Is that there's a compound filled with women and children and just a bunch of fucking soldiers mm-hmm. inside.
Yeah. That are geared up, ready to fight, had their women taken away. They believe that all this shit that he's saying.
Yeah.
They're geared up. Yeah. They're ready to go. So this is sick. This, I don't know if this pissed me off. This might have pissed me off more than anything. As the compound burned, the ATF replaced the flag of David, which Koresh was into Judaism, and so they flew the flag of David. They replaced it with an ATF flag and flew that thing up at the pole.
The second that it burned away.
Because they had fucking conquered it, like it was a military invasion. That
They were
like,
so proud of everything that happened that day. It was a victory.
That really pissed me off.
It's like George Bush, mission accomplished.
Yes, yes. You're killing me, Buster. The autopsy reports of the victims and the Branch Davidian are just awful. We've seen pictures. We've seen videos. Just dismembered, charred bodies. So cyanide, I didn't know this. It shrivels a body so bad it can break bones.
Yeah, it contracts the muscles like really bad.
It just, it like shrivels you up like a desiccant packet. And like I said, death row inmates are executed using cyanide gas, but they're strapped down, not so they don't run away, I guess, but so they don't just, you know.
So you don't see twist. Them turn into a raisin.
Yeah. And according to the autopsies, the residents of the compound were homicide victims. So.
Yeah. They were all shot or there's one toddler that was stabbed.
There's a toddler that was stabbed. Yes. Not sure what happened there. Couldn't find a lot, but that is insane.
I really tried, but yeah. Everybody else is just as confused as I am.
Yeah, I mean, it was a three-year-old, yeah, stabbed in the chest. But the compound was completely destroyed very, very, very soon after what happened, and they just destroyed a whole active crime scene. They just mowed everything down, and nobody said a thing about it.
No, everybody said, good job, America wins, and then walked away with a smile on their face.
The medical examiner reported 20 people, including 5 children under the age of 14, had been shot. And then, like you said, the 3-year-old stabbed in the chest. So what happened to Koresh? We don't know exactly, but according to the FBI, Steve Snyder, who is Koresh's number one guy, shot and killed Koresh and then committed suicide with the same gun. But a second account gives a totally different story, saying that Koresh died of a gunshot wound to the head during the course of the firefight. No one knows who killed him or if he killed himself. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols, the Oklahoma City bombing, actually cited Waco as their motivation for the Oklahoma City bombing. They did it on April 19th, 1995, which was timed to coincide with the second anniversary of the Waco assault. The Oklahoma City bombing is the biggest domestic terrorist attack in the history of the United States.
Yeah.
Might have to get into that. That's a terrible, terrible one. But yeah, they're like, oh, Waco.
Wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Waco.
Right? Thanks for that, Waco. Guys.
Yeah.
So that's
Waco.
So that's Waco. I don't know if you guys are angry, but we were pretty pissed off for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about Janet Reno.
No, we didn't. That's a whole nother, what, you have anything to say? I mean, that's a, oh my.
I don't know.
She was large and in charge at the time.
Yep.
This is on her for the most part.
It is. She, they put the whole thing on her basically and said that she gave the go ahead.
Which she did.
All that. She did.
But
she says that she was misinformed. She said that they got kids in there and they're using them as shields and
never happened.
No
but so, yeah,
if you're told that, you kind of, you know, think differently of the whole situation, but it wasn't like that.
No, it wasn't.
And no, there's not. And there's a lot of documentaries, if you guys don't believe me.
So much there are ones that paint him in just the worst light possible. There are ones that paint him in a positive light. I'm like halfway. I mean, yeah, he was a scumbag, but.
Yeah, if you get past his sexual deviancies, I would say.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say orientation because it's not an orientation.
He's a pedophile. Yeah. He is a pedophile, but
they didn't have to kill all those kids.
No, that's the whole thing. Like, that's fine. Do what, you know, take him out, whatever. Do whatever you got to do to him. I don't care. But
yeah,
all those children, all those people.
I'm not trying to idolize David Koresh, but
no. We're definitely not. Like, he's a piece of shit. I mean, he slept with young girls, but
yeah, but I mean, Catholicism has a dark history of pedophilia as well.
Yeah. A lot of religions do. A lot of organized religions do.
Yep.
Just saying.
So, like I always say, stay safe out there.
Bye, guys.
Please follow us on all social media platforms. Any questions or comments, email us at deadlyserial@gmail.com. If you would like to support this podcast, the link is in the description.